Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Spanning the nerd world and feeding your fandom. It's time for the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Here's your host, James Witham.
Here's to another year of being more human. It's episode 402 of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. I'm James Witham. So excited for Resident Alien to come back. So you know that I had to bring back the cast to talk about the upcoming season 2 premiere, right? Alan Tudyk's going to be on the show this week. Corey Reynolds, Sarah Tomko, Alice Wunderlin, and Chris Sheridan, the showrunner and executive producer. Who better to get all the scoop on season 2 of Resident Alien than that group, right? Also, if you're an anime fan, you might want to know about something that's hitting select theaters this week. That's Sing a Bit of Harmony, which is a really, really fun new anime movie. Going to talk to Jordan Dash Cruz and Ian Sinclair about their characters in that upcoming movie as well. Should be a lot of fun. Also going to be talking about a whole bunch of trailers this week. You know, Moon Knight, Vikings Valhalla, The Cuphead Show. I'll talk about those, plus the Lord of the Rings title. Yeah, I won't leave that out. Trust me on that. Let's get things started, though, with a group from Resident Alien. Those interviews are next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Tim Rozon from Wynonna Earp on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
How do you go from wanting to destroy the Earth to wanting to save it? Season 2 of Resident Alien going to be coming to Sci-Fi Channel January 26th. Can't wait for the show to come back. And I actually had a chance to have a roundtable discussion with members of the cast this week, joined by some fellow journalists to get some inside scoop on season 2. So you're going to hear from so many amazing people, starting with showrunner and executive producer Chris Sheridan. Here's part of what he had to say about this upcoming season.
I'm James Witham with the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Thank you so much. Talking to Chris Sheridan, EP, showrunner, Mr. Everything for Resident Alien, which is coming back on January the 26th on Sci-Fi. Chris, it seems like there's a lot of threats to deal with this season. You have Mike and Liv's investigation, you've got General Wright's team that's not going anywhere, and now you've got Harry's people possibly coming to kind of finish the job that Harry isn't doing. So how do you kind of balance all of those things while still finding time to have the fun that you guys love to have on the show?
It's a good question. The balance is really hard. There is a lot going on. There's not just a lot going on with the threats sort of heading towards Harry, but there's a lot going on in the other storylines that really have nothing to do with Harry, except sort of show thematically different pieces of human nature and that, you know, path of growth that humans have and the other characters that Harry's trying to learn himself. So it is a delicate balance. How do we balance it? I don't know. I mean, one of the things that we did going into it that helped is the show always was about a bunch of different things. So I think the audience expects that. I think the audience expects a lot going on. And I think they expect there's always a lot of different tones playing on in the show. And, you know, it was one of the questions going into it, would people be on board for a show that is really funny, but also has really emotionally connective moments and some dramatic, thrilling moments, plus the sci-fi. And as it turns out, they seem on board with it. It's something that separates it from a lot of other shows. It's not just one thing. You can't put it into one simple basket. And I think people are excited for that. And yeah, it was a goal all along to always have Harry's comfort level threatened while he was on Earth, so it's not too easy for him, because that's where a lot of Alan Tudyk's comedy comes from, is being put upon, whether it's, you know, from the general and her people, or whether it's, you know, from the people in town who are making things difficult for him.
Chris, I totally agree with what you said earlier about the show being more than just about Harry. There's a lot of great characters that we've seen on the show. Is there a character for this season that you really wanted to expand on more that we didn't get to see as much in season 1?
Well, our goal going into this season is to try to expand the world in general, you know, and try to expand all of them and see different aspects of their characters. And you know, I think we did that. I think some of the more external characters we're seeing more of, we're seeing a little more of Darcy's friend, Judy. We're seeing more of Ellen, who's the nurse who works in the clinic, who's a bit of a foil for Asta. Ben Hawthorne's wife, Kate, played by Meredith Gerritsen. We're going to see more of her in this season. She took a bit of a backseat in the first season to the stuff that Ben was going with, but we're going to get more into her character and fill her out more this season and make her a little bit more part of the ensemble as another sort of different type of a character in there. And we're going to go through her journey, and her journey plays, you know, very much into Ben's journey as well, which is, you know, Ben trying to find the strength to live his life basically, and to stand up as a mayor to these people in the town. And, you know, he's having a hard time even being strong enough to stand up to Kate, who we'll find out is a very, you know, strong-willed person like the rest of the women in the show. And what we'll sort of discover this season for Ben as part of his journey is in the process of learning how to, you know, have a better, more intimate and honest relationship with Kate, he gains the skill set that he needs to, you know, be a better mayor and be stronger and get the things done in town that he wants to do. So we're trying to tie them all together like that. And bringing Kate up as a bit of a bigger character, also as Max's mom, is going to help fill out those storylines a lot, which is going to be great.
Always great insight from Chris Sheridan about Resident Alien, and looking forward to a lot of that stuff in the second season. Going to move on to talk to Corey Reynolds and Alan Tudyk, or of course, you can go play Harry and Sheriff Mike, respectively. And one of the questions that one of the other journalists asked was about the fact that they're kind of being set up as adversaries here coming up in this season with the murder investigation and everything. You'll hear what they had to say about that. And then I asked something a little bit different as well. Check it out.
Well, you know, at the end of last season, we found out who killed Sam Hodges. And this season, we're going to delve more into the why. What exactly was the actual, the first human Harry Van Der Spiegel? What was he up to? And what type of chaos did, you know, Alan's character inherit by, you know, taking over his life? But it's still a tremendous amount of hijinks that takes place as we pursue said leads in the case.
Yeah, as foes, they're both, and out of respect, they both have their amount of being idiots. Out of respect, we're
facts.
Both
facts.
facts. So as foes, I think that's where the hilarity that ensues comes from, is the fact that they're both idiots. But, I mean, we started off as foes mm-hmm. from the very beginning. You didn't
very,
you don't
very,
trust.
Yes. It's and the joke you made about the black truck, you know, from the right. very, very first moment that they met. That set the tone in a way that they're still trying to recuperate from.
From the first kung-kung.
Alan, Corey, how you guys doing?
Good.
So really quickly, one of the things I love about the trailer is that Mike's just not buying this whole alien thing. And I don't think he's kind of bought it from the very beginning. So for the both of you, do you feel like that's going to continue to be to Harry's advantage this season? Or are we going to see Mike sort of kind of lean over a little bit and maybe start believing a little more?
I think he has a healthy skepticism of UFOs, and I don't see that, without getting into too much of the season, but I don't see that changing very much for him. I think Mike's very much into what he can see, smell, taste, touch. You know.
Yes. Also, simultaneously, Sheriff Mike would solidly believe in the chupacabra.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and he believes in that. Bigfoot. You know, he says that Bigfoot lives up in Seattle. So there yeah. are. And he also believes that women love buckets.
So that's the line. Yeah. Okay.
You know, the aliens line is the line he won't cross. That's the one that.
Don't love buckets? This is news to me. That explains why Christmas was so bad in the Tudyk household.
Yes, because ladies love their buckets. Absolutely.
I got my wife several buckets for Christmas.
Chris didn't like the buckets?
No. Dang it.
So yeah, I think his skepticism of aliens remains pretty firm thus far.
Lucky for me.
And speaking of lucky, I was so lucky to once again get a chance to talk to Alice Wetterland and Sarah Tomko, of course, played Darcy and Asta. And just, I remember last year talking to these two, and it was just such a fun conversation, and they certainly didn't disappoint talking about season two as well. Check it out.
So, Sarah, Alice, so wonderful to talk to you again. How you doing?
Hi, good.
Thank you, James. Hi.
Obviously, things aren't exactly awesome between Darcy and Asta right now. So where are we at as we start this season between the two of them?
Well, I think that Darcy has pent up frustration about a lot of things, not just Asta, but her life is not going the way she wanted. And she really needs Asta, basically. And so Asta's got more on her plate right now. And Darcy doesn't know what's going on. And there's this disconnect between them. So as we begin season two, I think we see Darcy doing her best to kind of repair and put out an olive branch with Asta and try to, you know, reconnect. Because, I mean, frankly, Asta's all she has in her life. So that's stable and good. So she really needs to.
Same. When you first see our episode start, it's a lot of, you know, what happened in season one, kind of, you know, picking up where we left off and sort of, you know, buttoning it and bringing it to a close. So I feel like season two really begins actually with this beautiful scene between Darcy and Asta, when Darcy comes to her and says, "I know your secret." And Asta obviously thinks she's talking about knowing about Harry being an alien. And it ends up, she knows that Jay's her daughter. And it's this beautiful, like, Asta's terrified in that moment, like, oh God, you know, but also thank God, you know, and then, oh, but you don't know, but you know, it's this great up and down that really, I think, kicks off what season two is all about, which is friendship, humanity, still a lot of lying, but also helping each other. And I think you're going to see Asta leaning on Darcy a lot more in season two in a way she never has before, which is just, I think, a really great thing to see on television, to have a friendship that's not about, you know, relationships with men, but really just about, like, helping each other out.
Yeah, they're each other's, you know, I mean, this is like, I think a lot of the fan reaction I've heard is from people is like that this friendship is similar to ones that they have in their lives. And this friendship is really reflective of one of my oldest friendships and their dynamic and how they lean on each other, and they're, you know, they're family to each other. But something about women becoming friends and having this kind of like love relationship that is platonic, but also very intense and very symbiotic in a lot of ways, you know, we don't always get to see that, especially in shows like this, in sci-fi shows. So it's really important, because it's a huge part of my life, and I love to see it reflected on screen.
So really quickly, we saw Darcy kind of bonding moment with Asta's daughter Jay last season. Do you kind of feel like Darcy could actually be the key to helping Jay open up to Asta a little bit more coming up this season?
Maybe. You might say that might be something that might be some way in true to what you said.
I think that I'm super jealous, but I think you're onto something. I'm not quite sure how it's going to work out. Truly, we're not sure how the next couple episodes are going to go. And we haven't had any of that kind of closure yet with Jay and I, but it seems like an obvious key link, but I just need to get over my jealousy and ego about it, you know?
Yeah. And Darcy needs to wonder why she's so comfortable hanging out with teenagers.
She's comfortable hanging out with anybody. Come on.
It's true.
Yeah, but she's got no problem being at a college party in a way that is maybe a little distressing.
And honestly, if you loved season one of Resident Alien, I think you're going to love season two just as much for the same reasons, but also for a couple of more very interesting reasons as well coming up this season. That's all I can really say. Just make sure you're watching Resident Alien January 26th. Coming up on Sci-Fi. They're actually going to have more episodes, split the season up into two parts this year. So we're going to get more Resident Alien throughout the year, which I really, really love. And again, thanks to Chris Sheridan and Alan Tudyk, Corey Reynolds, Sarah Tomko, Alice Wetterland for joining me to talk about Resident Alien. Also, I want to give a shout out to Damon Holbrook from TV Insider and TV Guide Magazine, who I was partnered up with in the roundtables for his insightful questions and for just keeping the mood in the room really, really fun. So thanks to him as well. And yeah, make sure you're watching Resident Alien on Sci-Fi, because you've got no reason not to at this point. Up next, going to be talking a little bit of Harmony. That's right, Sing a Bit of Harmony, the brand new anime movie from Funimation. And I'm going to be talking to Ian Sinclair and Jordan Dash Cruz about that next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Allison Aria from DC's Peacemaker, and you're listening to Down and Nerdy.
Certainly don't talk about enough anime on the show. Going to fix that this week by talking about a new film from Funimation and Company called Sing a Bit of Harmony. And yes, there's plenty of music involved, plenty of fun, some artificial intelligence, some great sci-fi elements there as well. So I got a chance to talk to Ian Sinclair, who does the voice of Go-chan in this movie in the English dub. Jordan Dash Cruz as well, who does the voice of Toma in the movie. And if you've seen the movie, you know how important those characters are. So let's hear from them more about Sing a Bit of Harmony. Alrighty, Ian, Jordan, how you guys doing?
Pretty good. Doing pretty great. Good, man.
How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. So hey. Sing a Bit of Harmony, a lot of energy there. It's already been released in Japan, quite popular over there already. What do you think U.S. anime fans are going to enjoy most about the film?
I think they're going to enjoy the whole film.
I mean, ideally, yeah, I agree.
I think that they're going to love the fact that it is a really good story that is grounded in a lot of real and like emotional kind of interpersonal stuff that we all deal with. And it's, you know, also something that has the elements of anime and the fantastic and like sci-fi elements that still, you know, us anime fans, we love so much. So it gives you both, and it gives you something that you can, you know, take your mom to, and then your mom will go, you know, that anime thing you watch so much ain't that bad. And you go, I told you, mom. That might just be me. I don't know.
They gotta put that on the poster. Safe to take your mom to.
Yes, dude.
There we go. I agree with Ian. You know, I think that this film is something that people are going to be able to relate to. They're going to be able to see these characters and say, hey, you know, that kind of reminds me of me, you know, back when I was younger. Or kids who are in high school that watch the film, hey, that kind of reminds me of me now. It is very real, and I think that that's what's so appealing about it. You know, the wacky stuff in anime is great, and it's a lot of fun. But when you're able to get a film that's very real and deals with, you know, real issues that people deal with, I think a lot more people tend to say, oh, okay, you know, like I kind of can relate to this, so I really, really enjoy this, you know.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it's harder to relate to. I'm a teenager who turned into a giant werewolf, but
exactly.
Secretly I'm an otter.
Exactly.
Like this is something like, yeah, relationships. I know what that's like.
Yeah, this is a little bit more reachable. Yeah, that's yeah, I would say that's about right.
Mom doesn't go, what, he's a werewolf pig?
You talked about the sci-fi elements, and of course we're dealing with an AI here. Shion has a really, I mean, just a big personality. So how do you think your characters would describe her and their first impressions of her?
She's a lot. She seems pretty cool. I think that's what he'd say.
I feel like my character would just be like, oh, this is so sick. This is so awesome.
Yes, he would. This is sick.
There's no doubt about that. No doubt about it. I mean, you see the excitement on his face in the trailer, so yeah. Hey, you'll see more of it coming up in the movie too.
Yeah, he's a lovable being.
well, let's talk about Toma and Go-chan for a little bit. What's the favorite? What is your favorite thing about your characters?
I love playing laid back characters. It's one of my favorites. But I play a lot of characters who are very big that have. I'll use the word big. So for me, it was refreshing, and it always feels really good when I can play very soft, very kind, very grounded and realistic. It allows me to, instead of having to try to filter it through, you know, how would a giant werewolf pig deal with this? It's just trying to really find the deep truths within me and my emotions and my past. And bring it out. All the best performances come from someone just like knowing what that's like and what that feeling is, and then just kind of reliving it. And that's what I was able to do. I was able to tap into as honest and as truthful and as soft a character. I don't usually get to speak that softly, and that was really cool. Caitlin Glass is a fantastic director, and I think she did an amazing job casting this.
Yes. I agree. For me, I guess for Toma, I just like the fact that he's himself, you know.
Yeah.
He's not trying to be anybody, you know. He's got his interests, he's got the way that he is, you know. He's a little bit more on the shy, like introverted side, but he's there for his friends, you know. He wants to help as best as he can, and you know, he always, at least for the most part, tries to do it with a smile on his face. Yeah, you know, so that's what I really admire about him, is just, you know, he's willing to, you know, say, hey, you know, like I get that I'm smart when it comes to electronics because he's part of the electronics club. And, you know, he's like, hey, I'll help out best I can.
His facial expressions in this movie are priceless.
Yeah, they are.
Priceless. I love it.
Yeah, he's he's great.
So one of the, you talk about, you know, this being such a relatable show. It seems like this group of friends doesn't like really start out as a group of friends early on. How much did you both enjoy telling the story of just how this group actually came together?
I loved it. I had a great time. I like all these people. And so it was good work with them. I beat you.
Yeah, no, I loved telling the story just about just this group of you know, friends. Like, I think we've all kind of going back to the realism, you know, I think we've all kind of been there where it's like, you know, people, but you're not necessarily close. And then experiences in life bring you closer together. So again, just kind of delving into that realism. So it was really fun to tell that story.
Another very realistic thing is sometimes, especially, I mean, if I'm remembering correctly from high school, like, yeah, you will have been friends with somebody many grades before, but because so much happens, like, you may not have hung out with someone since third grade. You know each other, you're kind of friends, you're, oh, that's a popular kid, that's a whatever, but it feels like they grew up together and they have all this knowledge, but we all want the same thing, not only plot-wise, but they're all going towards their own happiness and they all find that together.
See, that's called an interesting tease in the biz. So that's very done, Ian. Well done.
Not my first rodeo.
There you go. So, I mean, the movie's called Sing a Bit of Harmony, so obviously music, a big part of the film. Since you all were doing dubs, did you actually get to hear any of the music while you were recording? And did any of the songs actually get stuck in your head at any point?
We got to hear the Japanese. I don't think Megan was recorded by the time I had been in. But since I've heard them, because I have my singing line gets stuck in my head all the time. And now the whole song, now that I've heard the whole dub, now the song is stuck in my head.
Agreed.
Did you guys know that you were going to be singing going into this, though?
No. I think she told us, but like, I didn't know how much. Like, you never know, same. Like, whether it's going to be like, do I have a solo? Do I have a whole song? Do I have three songs?
Same.
Or it's like, you got a line. It'll be like, one of the first questions I asked was, is he a good singer? Because that changes everything. If they're a good singer, oh man, you got to try. You got to hit every note. If you're just being a person who's singing from their heart, just sing from your heart. And then if it doesn't sound like it sounds more realistic and all that. And so luckily I found out I don't have to be a pristine singer in it. And so it just took all the weight off.
So fun. Not exactly on the resume then. Okay.
Good to know. Oh no, but at the same time, one of the best songs that I've been a part of in anime. Like,
there you
far.
Go.
Like, it's
there you
such
go.
Such a good one.
Yeah, no, I think I was right there with you. Like it was one of those things where I was just like, I don't know. Well, if I do, I do. And if I don't, I guess I don't. It was, you know, not to say too much, because obviously I don't want to spoil anything. It was fun. It was interesting and fun. And that's all I'll say.
There you go. Well, we're going to keep it spoiler free, of course, with this last one as well before I let you guys go. There's a line in the movie somewhere there. It says the secrets are always revealed at the end. So, of course, no spoilers. How surprised do you think people are going to be about this final act? Because I was.
Dude, me too. And it's so rewarding. It's so rewarding because you go back through the movie and you go, that's why blank was blank. Ah,
yeah.
Blank makes, that's so sweet. And then I ran to my girlfriend and I was be like, hey, you remember when you were watching them and you came in the movie and blank was doing blank? It's because of this. Loved it. I love that ending.
It's great. It really is. I was very surprised, very pleasantly surprised. Yeah, it's kind of just like Ian said. It's like,
I know, and I did that too. Now I don't feel embarrassed for doing that at all in a room by myself because I'm glad you guys reacted the same way.
Yeah. We were in the thing and we were still
exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it was great, man.
Well, just be ready to get your minds blown. In select theaters beginning at January 23rd. That's where you could see Sing a Bit of Harmony. Ian Sinclair, Jordan Dash Cruz, guys, thank you so much for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, man.
And the guys really hit the nail on the head when talking about this thing because there's so much fun involved and there's some great visuals. The music is cool. But This movie, Sing a Bit of Harmony, goes much deeper than you think it does. Make sure you're paying attention and remembering all the things that happen early on. It's going to pay off in a big way. And I got to say, I'm not the most experienced anime person in the world, but watching this, I really, really enjoyed it. Especially the payoff at the end made me appreciate the earlier parts of the movie even more so. Make sure you find a way to see Sing a Bit of Harmony in select theaters from Funimation. I think you're really, really going to enjoy it. Once again, thanks to Ian Sinclair and Jordan Dash Cruz for joining me to talk about Sing a Bit of Harmony. Hopefully you can find a theater near you that's showing that this weekend. Up next, gonna head over to the Peacock streaming service and talk about Supernatural Academy, the brand new animated series. I'll talk about that next with my review on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, this is Blue Diamond Phillips, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Time for us to exit the human world and head to the Supernatural Academy. The brand new animated series has dropped on Peacock. Of course, this is based on the Supernatural Academy books by Jamin Eve. And I thought I would go ahead and give a spoiler-free review of this one just because, I mean, the show just came out on Thursday. I don't want to be that guy. Plus, maybe you didn't know about it at all and you just need more info. So don't worry, I got you covered here. So quickly, basically the show is based on a couple of twin sisters. You've got Misha, who of course was brought up in the human world and had no idea
that she had supernatural powers. And, you know, she's kind of shy and unsure of herself, too. And then you've got Jessa, who's the opposite. She was raised in this magical world. She has her powers down already. She's very confident. She has a big group of friends and things like that. So they are very much opposites. And this is really no spoiler because it's in the description for the show. So I'm not spoiling anything here for you. But basically, they end up finding out about each other. But they also find out that they are dragon marked. And what does that mean? Well, basically, dragon marked means that you're a slave to serve the Dragon King, which is a bad thing, by the way. So they basically have to suck it up, work together to save themselves, their friends, their family, and the world that they're in, too, by the way. Now, the thing about this show for me is that, first of all, I go into this fully understanding that I'm not the target demo for this show. Okay, I'm going to put that out there right now, but I think I can still be fair about this because I don't know that this show knows what its target demo wants to be. And I say that because in the beginning, you kind of think, okay, so this is more of like a young adult type series. And then it just feels like it gets a little bit more, I don't want to say adult, maybe teenager-esque. And then it seems like it keeps reverting into all of these different, well, it seems like it's suited for this group, and it seems like it's suited for this group. And the language in the show, which, of course, I'm not a prude. You've heard me drop plenty of language on this show before. I was surprised to see it in this show because I thought that this was more of a younger tilt show, and it turns out it's absolutely not. So, obviously, I didn't read the book, so I can't give you this is a faithful adaptation of the books type of thing. But it just feels like these characters don't know we don't know how these characters are presented for what particular age group, I guess is what I'm going at. And maybe this is something that's supposed to appeal to all age groups, right? You know, you've got sisters that don't necessarily get along right away. You've got parents who seem to abandon each other in a weird way and have kind of a weird relationship. You've got a weird headmaster Kristoff, who's got some shady stuff going on. You've got this very interesting group of friends. I mean, you've got wolf shifters where, you know, Jessa can turn in to a werewolf. You've got Brax who can turn into a dragon. You've got Max who's a vampire sort of thing. So you're running the gambit. You've also got, you know, you've got mermaids in here. So if you got a lot of magical elements and characters in this thing. So there's a lot going on here. And that's actually one of my criticisms of the first couple of episodes. It's like they really throw a lot of characters at you right away, like a lot. They expect you to catch on really, really quick. And it doesn't really take the time to kind of flesh out these character dynamics right away. It almost feels like you're dropped into this world instead of really. And they kind of try to explain it in the early going along the way. It's not hard to follow. Don't get me wrong. It's not hard to follow. It's just that there's not a lot of depth that's given to these characters before you're thrown right into everything. Except for Misha. I think Misha, you probably get a decent amount of depth on her right away. With some of these other characters, it's more like, okay, I get it. He's this. Or I get it. She's this. Or I get it. They're this. So as far as who their characters are. And maybe that's fine. Maybe you can move on and brush that along because you should know what the deal is with these characters and who they are and what kind of characters you're dealing with here. And maybe the focus should be on the story and about the dragon mark and about how these sisters are going to get along long enough. But there's definitely a lot of tropey stuff here, and I could sit here and nitpick this thing probably quite a bit, but I'm not really going to do that. I just feel like, again, I'm not the age group that they're going for with this, but I wish it was a little bit more clear who should be watching this. Like, obviously, you know, for a couple of different reasons, I can't let my 7-year-old watch this show. But yet, if I had, say, a 13, 14-year-old daughter, would she enjoy the show? I don't know, because it might not be aged up enough. I don't, there's a line there, and I'm not sure what it is and where to go with this, right? Now, are there some fun character dynamics in the Circle of Friends? Sure. Are there plenty of relatable things about a bunch of these characters? Sure. Absolutely. Are there familiar themes that a younger audience would take to pretty quickly and see, like, oh, that I enjoyed show X, and this seems like show X, so I enjoy it partially for that reason, and I'll give it a chance. Sure. There are a lot of things that have that going for it. But again, without a clear identity of who this show is supposed to be for, I think that that kind of hurts the way the story is being told a little bit. And again, as the episodes go on, and I got to see quite a bit of the episodes before giving this review, as the show goes on, things maybe become a little bit clearer and things certainly get more and more interesting as far as what's going on with the story and this unraveling this mystery of the Dragon Mark and finding out exactly what these sisters need to do and this group of friends needs to do. But at the same time, there's a lot of stuff there that kind of takes you out of it a little bit too. So is it perfect? No. Is it one that you need to avoid? No, I don't think so. I think if you liked the books, this is certainly something I think you should give a chance. But at the same time, if you're looking for something that's right on that edge of being for kids and being for teenagers, this is something that certainly as an adult, you wouldn't have a problem with this as a whole. There's certainly some annoying things in here, but it's like teenage drama type stuff that, you know, if you're already into that sort of thing by other shows that you watch, it probably won't bother you in this show. But again, Supernatural Academy to me, this is one I'm really curious to hear what you guys think about. So make sure you go to downandnerdypodcast.com or follow along on social media at downandnerdy757 on Twitter and Instagram and at downandnerdy on Facebook. I really want to know what you thought of Supernatural Academy. That's going to do it for my spoiler-free review of Supernatural Academy from Peacock. Up next, let's tackle the latest nerd news. I'm James Witham, and this is the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is comic book writer Peter Hogan, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
What's in a name? Apparently a whole lot. It's time for nerd news, and you know that the new Lord of the Rings series that's going to be coming to Prime Video is going to happen on September the 2nd of this year, but we finally know what the title of the series is going to be, and let's just say fans not so thrilled with the title. First of all, I've got to admit that the video that they released for the title treatment was pretty awesome. All the molten steel in the water, and you're expecting something big and epic and profound, and it's the Rings of Power. And I see that, and I just go, remember The Price is Right, that sound that they used to make when somebody would lose, and or something like that? That's how I felt when I saw this title, because, you know, you build something up so much, and there has been a lot of build up to this by both Amazon and Warner Brothers leading up to this series, and especially that since they already announced the title for the anime movie that they're going to be doing as well, and that was just so mysterious and cool, and then you get The Rings of Power, which just seems really unimaginative and really on the nose for some reason, right? It's almost like you're trying to dumb it down a little bit in a weird way, and I get it, okay? So normally I'm not that guy, right? And I would say it's just a title, who cares? We haven't seen a trailer yet, we barely even seen a first look yet of what the show's going to look like. Doesn't the content matter more than anything else? And yes, it absolutely does, but what this is a little bit of a troublesome start, because you're thinking to yourself, okay, if you couldn't come up with a great title, like something that really catches your attention, then what did you do with the story? So that's the thing that you've got to worry about a little bit. And this is one of those rare times where I kind of understand why this is a little bit bigger of a deal than it would normally be, because that is just a little weird, right? Because you've seen bad titles sort of botch things in the past, right? I mean, that's certainly something that's happened before. And Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, for example, That was not a title that was met with a lot of applause. And, you know, look how that turned out for plenty of fans, even though, of course, I didn't hate it. But, you know, also didn't love it either. So, I don't know. and maybe it's my fault. Maybe I built this up too much in my head already because I've looked so forward to this coming to Prime Video on September the 2nd. And I've just been building it up in my head ever since because I've been waiting for a Lord of the Rings series to come out because I really think that's a story format that fits Lord of the Rings storytelling. And then I see this title and I go, ah, really? Ugh, you know, all right, I can live with the title. And I can, I promise. But now you got to wow me with the trailer. Because if you don't wow me with the trailer at this point, and we're probably a pretty good ways off from getting a first trailer. Now, if you don't wow me with the trailer, I'm really going to be worried. So there's a lot of pressure now, I think, that's going to be attached to this upcoming trailer for Lord of the Rings, whether we like it or not. It's called The Ring of Power, which will be coming soon to Prime Video from Amazon and Warner Brothers Television. Speaking of television, there's plenty of trailers to talk about this week. And yep, we saw the Moon Knight trailer drop not too long ago. We now also know that the show is going to be starting on Disney Plus on March 30th. Of course, we've got Oscar Isaac, who's going to be playing Moon Knight / Mark Spector. And I got to tell you, this one does look dark and gritty, doesn't it? Which is kind of what it has to be and kind of what fans were hoping for. And it looks like that's exactly what we're getting. And I mean, hey, if you didn't know if you were asleep or awake, you'd probably go a little insane too. So it really captures the madness of this character quite a bit. And I got to tell you, Oscar Isaac just looks like he's just made for this part, doesn't he? Of course, everybody thinks he's crazy and things like that. We actually get to see him in the Moon Knight suit. Well, I'm sure it's not him. I'm sure it's a stunt double that's in the Moon Knight suit. But at the same time, you get to actually see the suit in the trailer. And it does not disappoint at all. And of course, the logline for the show is Welcome to the Chaos, which sort of makes sense in this regard, right? And then you've got Ethan Hawke. We get to see his character a little bit too. You know, not a whole lot of reveal there for his character, but certainly creepy enough to make things interesting. So I got to tell you, this is one where, yeah, Moon Knight's kind of a deep cut character, but it's also one of those characters that has an intriguing storyline and a really cool suit. And that's, again, you want to talk about something that catches your eye if you're somebody that really, really doesn't know a whole lot about Moon Knight. And I'd be lying if I said I was deep and steeped in Moon Knight comics knowledge. That's just a character that kind of slipped through the cracks for me when I was younger reading comics. So I don't have a ton of Moon Knight knowledge. So I go into this not completely blind, but certainly not as well-versed as some fans are that have read the comics in the past. But if you're somebody that knows absolutely nothing about Moon Knight, and you see this trailer, you go, Oscar Isaac, check. Really cool suit, check. Oh, this story looks interesting, check. And that's what you do when you release the first trailer for something. Because again, you want to reel in the fans that maybe don't know a ton about this character and kind of go from there, because Marvel's done a fantastic job with that up to this point. So why would they stop now and they can do the same thing with a character like Moon Knight? And then the sky's the limit from there. You never know how far you can go. Did they think that Agatha Harkness was going to catch fire in WandaVision? Maybe, maybe not. But now look how that sort of branched out. You just never know what you're going to get. And I think what Disney's hoping is that, and Marvel Studios is hoping, is that that Moon Knight really, really catches people's attention and is a character that they could do a lot with going forward. So, I mean, hey, bravo on the first trailer being exactly what you need. And I'm intrigued. I'm absolutely 100% intrigued, and I can't wait to see where this show's going to go. And is it going to be the darkest Marvel series on Disney Plus yet? And does that open doors for other things that maybe we might want? We'll have to wait and see. Yes, speculation, of course. I'm not going to say it out loud because you'll get mad at me. And I don't want you to get mad at me yet. Well, maybe you'll get mad at me in a few minutes. Here's something else that I've really been looking forward to, and that is Vikings Valhalla, which is the new series that's going to be coming to Netflix. It's actually going to be set over 1,000 years ago in the early 11th century. Yes, this is based in the same world as the Vikings TV series. And what we're going to have is we're going to have Leif Erikson is going to be a part of this. You've got Freydis, Eric's daughter, is going to be a part of this. And also Harald Sigurdsson. And excuse me if I butchered any of those names, trying my best here. But basically, it's going to highlight the tension between the Vikings and the English royals. And boy, does this trailer show that there is a epic war on the horizon. And these Vikings feel like, again, they've been wronged by the royals. So they're going after their land. That's the one thing that they love the most, other than their power, is their land. So the Vikings are like, all right, well, we're just going to go take it. Now, can they survive against the English royal army? We'll have to find out, or soldiers, or whatever you want to call them at the particular point in history. But can they survive against these knights? We'll have to wait and see. And again, this is one of those things where you could see this running multiple seasons, right? So that's one of the cool things about this show. And it just looks, it looks like one of those things where, you know, you're going to learn a lot about these characters, I think, going forward. But at the same time, you're also just going to get these epic battle scenes with just bodies everywhere and swords flying and shields clanging and things like that. And you know what? At the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with that. If you're in it for the battles, I'm not mad at you. I think that I kind of agree with you a little bit, as a matter of fact. So really, really looking forward to this one as well. This one, of course, is going to be coming out on Netflix on February the 25th. And if whether you watch the Vikings series or not, I think this is one you can jump into and really, really enjoy. If you're a gamer, you recognize Cuphead. Well, the Cuphead show is going to be coming to Netflix. The animated series is going to be starting on February the 18th on Netflix. And I got to say, one of the things I really loved about this trailer right off the bat is the animation style. Because the animation style and just the whole vibe of the show really gives me a classic Looney Tunes vibe. As a matter of fact, I'd go as far as to say this feels like one of those shows where you get an animated short before a movie. That used to be a thing, boys and girls, before end credit scenes and 2.5 hour long movies that don't necessarily need to be 2.5 hours long. You had little cartoons before the movie would start, and that's exactly the kind of vibe that I'm getting from the Cuphead show. And that is said with the utmost of appreciation, and please, I hope that that's considered a compliment by the creative team involved here. But you've got Cuphead, you've also got his brother Mugman. You know, of course, they're going all around Inkwell Isles, and they're trying to, you know, have some fun, maybe have a little bit of adventure. Then the devil pops up, and all hell breaks loose, literally and figuratively. But at the same time, again, you're giving me such a great classic Looney Tunes vibe. And if you remember the Cuphead game, and how that was just such a groundbreaking way to model your game and presentation that you got from that game. And you certainly, that carries into this animated series as well. And what this show looks like is just a lot of fun, period. I mean, that's just, and there's nothing wrong with that either. There's a ton of fun. It's got a great cast. You've got True Valentino is going to be Cuphead. Frank Todaro is going to be Mugman. The voice of the Dice King, by the way, Wayne Brady. How about that? And Greg Griffin's going to be in this as well. Johanna. You've also got Luke Millington Drake. So a really good cast that's involved in this thing as well. It just looks like a ton of fun. February 18th can't come here soon enough as far as I'm concerned, because I need to have the Cuphead show in my life for certain. So it's been a while since I've done any comic book news on the show. And there's varying reasons for that. This one I couldn't let it go, though. DC Comics has had a press release this week saying that they are going to be killing the Justice League. Now, before you do your deep sigh, give me a second here to kind of give you some of the particulars, because it's going to start on April the 19th with Justice League number 75. The creative team on this, legit. Joshua Williamson and Rafa Sandoval, you know, you trust them with almost anything, right? It's going to be a big 48-page supersized issue. They're going to have a bunch of variant covers there as well. Some of them have, you saw one, I believe it's the Dan Jurgens cover, where it's got the caskets on it of some of the Justice League members that will perish. But here's the thing that automatically jumped out to a bunch of fans and jumped out to me as well. Okay, so when you hear they're going to kill the Justice League and you see coffins for Batman and Wonder Woman and Superman, that alone is jarring enough, right? But do you know whose coffin you don't see is Barry Allen's, The Flash? So, and of course, longtime writer of The Flash, Joshua Williamson, by the way, that's certainly worth noting. But here's the deal, is that The Flash survives, which means you could at any point retcon this whole thing if it's not working because you let Barry Allen survive. And no, again, nothing wrong with Barry Allen surviving. I love Barry Allen. But it's that back door into, well, we can undo this whenever we want sort of thing. Now, could they also undo it any other number of ways? Sure. They absolutely could, but it's a lot easier when you got Barry Allen. And then you see the Green Lantern casket, but Hal Jordan's standing right in the middle of everything. So you kill off a Green Lantern, but it's not Hal Jordan. So then there's that. So I obviously feel like it's probably Jon Stewart that dies, right? But again, you don't get rid of Hal Jordan. You don't get rid of Barry Allen. It looks like Aquaman is a part of this as well. But basically, it seems like the gist here is to highlight some other heroes. Now, if you look at what they're actually doing here, one of the things that they talk about in the press release, and of course, you know, not a ton of details that get revealed at this point, but basically there's a dark army that's made up of the DCU's greatest villains, and they formed on the edges of the multiverse, and the best and most powerful heroes are pulled together in an epic war to push the darkness back. In the end, the Justice League are killed by the dark army, with only one survivor to warn the remaining heroes about Earth, heroes of Earth, about what's coming. Now, you see all these other heroes of Earth on one of these covers as well. And if you want to highlight some of the other characters, that's fine by me. Because you know what? At this point, I'll be honest. I was upset about this at first. And then I thought about it. And I was like, you know, isn't it time to do something different here? Isn't it time to just throw caution to the wind and say, you know what? Let's just do something. Because I feel like, my personal opinion is that comics as a whole, outside of a couple of publishers, and I don't really want to single out anybody here, but outside of a couple of publishers, hasn't been a fantastic year for comics, right? There's not a ton of titles that jumped out and grabbed me and said, I need to read this now, and I need to keep reading these every week for the rest of the year, or as long as you're going to put them out. There weren't a ton of titles that did that for me, and maybe I'm alone in that. Judging by what I'm seeing on social media, I don't think I am. You do something like this, though, and that at least, and again, maybe it's gimmicky, and this is just something that we do in comics every now and then, where you try to kill off a character or a bunch of characters and that's the impact you're going to make. Is that a trope of the comic industry? Absolutely it is. But you know what? They got to try something, okay? They've got to do something to make a splash and get some attention. And that's exactly what this kind of thing does, is if nothing else, it grabs some attention and maybe puts some attention onto your product line that wasn't there beforehand. And, you know, as much as people bitch about this, you're still going to read it to find out what happens. Let's just be honest with ourselves. You're going to read it anyway. You're going to buy the issue probably as a collector's item anyway. So, you know, you might as well just go into it with an open mind at this point. Plus, fact of the matter is, I mean, if you're, they're going to have probably like 5 or 6 other Batman books going on at the same time with Bruce Wayne. You're going to have some Superman books. You're going to have probably some Wonder Woman books and so on and so forth. It's not like these characters are going away completely, okay? You're going to have certain stories with these characters in them. There's nothing in the press release that says that. I just know comics, and that's just what happens, okay? Especially comics in this generation. So it's not like you're going to be devoid of any stories from the characters that you know and love. This is just going to be a mainlining continuity thing that they're doing to shake things up a bit. You can do out of continuity stuff all you want and make people happy. But here's the deal. This may or may not work out. This may or may not get retconned immediately, but at least they're trying something. Are they trying something that's completely original and outside the box? No, and part of the reason for that is because probably because when they try to do that, there's a lot more complaints about that than anything else. So they're trying something that goes the safe route. That's a tried and true method. I mean, even Joshua Williamson said in the press release, he was talking about how he remembers buying Death of Superman 30 years ago. And you think, you're like 30 years later and they're still using the same gimmick. And it's not just, DC's not the only one that's guilty of this, because Marvel does it all the time with all kinds of other characters. And, you know, you set up your new number one and you call it a day sort of thing. So, but, and here's the other thing. So Dark Knight's metal didn't kill the Justice League, but this will. And that's the other thing that popped up into my head immediately. The amount of threat that they faced during Dark Knight's metal and death metal and things like that, if they survived that and can't survive whatever this is, I have to see whatever this is. So you've got my curiosity piqued automatically just because of that. But am I going to give it a chance? Of course I'm going to give it a chance. Now, is it going to work out? Who knows? I really hope it does, because I want to see something innovative come out of an idea that's been done 1,000 times. And I have confidence that Joshua Williamson and Rafa Sandoval and company can deliver. I'm just hoping that they get the freedom to do so. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Again, thanks to the wonderful cast of Resident Alien for joining me this week. Also, Jordan Dash Cruz and Ian Sinclair from Sing a Bit of Harmony. You can see that in select theaters this weekend. Also, as far as Resident Alien, go see that on Sci-Fi coming up. Also, find us online at downandnerdypodcast.com. Follow us on social media as well, at downandnerdy757 on Twitter and on Instagram, and at downandnerdy on Facebook. Also, make sure you're subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, you never have to apologize for being a nerd, so let your fan flag fly and be good to your fellow nerds.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.